In the last episode, we considered the nuances in discovering a college counselor. In this episode, we'll cover the essential differences between two different types of schools, large universities and small colleges. I'll be joined by Jonathan Dunn. Jonathan has been a college counselor for over 30 years, 13 of which have been at Fairmont Preparatory Academy and Fairmont International School in Southern California. He has experience with and a deep knowledge of colleges and universities in English-speaking countries possessed by only a handful of other counselors. As one of only approximately 350 certified educational planners, or CEPs, in the world, he is especially well qualified to work with students and their families. He has visited hundreds of college campuses around the United States and Canada. Mr. Dunn holds a bachelor's degree from Oberlin College, a master's degree from the University of Southern California, an education degree from UCLA, and a college counseling certificate from UC San Diego. He's a member of the IECA, as well as the Western National and International Associations for College Admission Counseling. He teaches history at a local California community college. He is a faculty consultant to the Advanced Placement Program for the College Board, and he has served on the Counselor Advisory Board for the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. In his free time, Jonathan enjoys exploring the outdoors and playing music. Jonathan, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, could you explain your background and specifically what got you into college counseling?
Sure. I am the son of two university professors who worked at large rival schools in Southern California. My father was a professor at University of Southern California, USC, and my mother was at UCLA, certainly made for some interesting dinner time conversations. But I basically grew up on those two campuses. So I was surrounded by college and college knowledge from the very start. In fact, my nerdy parents, whenever we traveled, we actually would visit colleges and universities around the country as part of our trips, which is something that they liked to do. And I think a lot of that ended up getting passed down to me. So I grew up on college campuses and have always been interested in the college scene.
UCLA is kind of the heart of college counseling there, isn't it, with their training program?
Right. UCLA. They have a certificate program that's quite well known. Although I did not go to that one, I actually went to a college counseling certificate program through UC San Diego many years ago.
So how do you think that sort of background has impacted the way that you have approached college counseling?
Well, what's really interesting in my own personal experience, having grown up on those large university campuses, I knew them very well. But at the same time, I knew that I myself probably wanted to go to a smaller institution for my undergraduate education. And so my parents were very open to that, and they let me sort of do my own exploration. And so that has sort of shaped my own philosophy of college counseling, where I believe it's really the student's educational path, and it's really the student's job, with support of the parents, of course, to undertake their own college search and application process.
So it sounds like you took on a lot of those responsibilities yourself in your own college process.
Yes, I'm a large believer in students being able to take charge of their own college search and application process, but I do feel it's very important for parents to have a role in the process, but not to orchestrate and drive the process. One of the things that I let parents know is that, especially with such increasing selectivity among the big name schools, I want parents to understand that the college admissions process is not a reflection of their parenting skills. And I know parents are so nervous about that. But in the long run, I am a believer that students go where they are supposed to go. They're admitted to college where they're supposed to be admitted. And if they have a thoughtful process that's really well designed, I think students end up in a place where they're going to be academically challenged and socially happy, which I think is the most important thing of all.
Yeah, and I think you're sort of hinting at an element of fate, I think, to all of these things. It certainly seems to be out of the parent's hands, although it might be the last thing you want to hear as a parent.
Right, and I think that parents probably would benefit from being a fly on the wall in an admissions committee meeting where they have to make this extremely difficult decision. You know, literally it's, well, should we take the state speech and debate champion from Texas, or should we take the speech and debate champion from New York? We can't take them both. They're both outstanding students. They're both amazing kids. But which one should we take? Mm-hmm. And so college counselors and parents and students really never know what exactly the admissions committee is looking for. You know, they may have certain geographical needs they need to fill. They may have certain requests from professors in certain departments that they want to get certain students admitted. And so it is something that's completely out of control of the parents and the students. I think that's important to know that when students apply to college, they really need to understand the kind of institution that they would like to attend and then craft a list of schools that have similar personalities. And that's one of the things that I really do in my own college counseling process with students.
Yeah, and I think you can't, you know, predict who is going to accept their offer too. So there's just so many factors that are out there. Could you explain, and I'm getting a sense of it already, but could you explain your core philosophy as a college counselor? What is your kind of objective as a counselor, if you had to put it tersely?
I think the most important thing for a student is to find the right fit. There are so many different colleges out there with so many different personalities. And so I think it's important for the personality of the student to match the personality of the college. And I think if a student is really going on some kind of a journey of self-discovery where they can really understand who they are and what they stand for personally, then that really also helps them in the college search process for them to find that right fit. And, you know, there are 3,000 colleges in the United States, and every one of them is different, and they all have personalities and souls of their own. They're living, breathing entities. So I think it's really important for a student to really find the college that matches their persona.
Do you find that to be a bit of a moving target, particularly with 17, maybe 18-year-old kids who are, you know, as you say, well, it's a matter of determining fit, personality. That is definitely something that's evolving and changing quite rapidly at that age. And the colleges are evolving and changing. So how do you deal with that, the fact that it's sort of so fluid?
It all depends upon when I start working with that student. You know, if I start working with that student when they are a little bit younger, like 10th grade or the very beginning of 11th grade, they have some opportunity and some time to go and visit schools. And I don't mean the usual list. You know, let's visit all the schools that we don't have a chance of getting into. Let's visit a wide array of schools. It can even be local, but just to see the kind of college, the type of college environment. You know, visit a large public research institution, sit in on a class, see what it's like. Visit a small liberal arts college. Take the tour, sit in on a class, meet a professor, see what that's like. And in doing that, I think students, not with the idea in mind that they're going to go to those specific colleges that they're visiting, but with the idea in mind that this is where they could sort of test the potential environment of a college and see what they want. And when a student has the opportunity to do that, what I do is that I then sit down with them and I say, without mentioning the names of any real schools that actually exist, I want you to make up a generic utopian college in your own mind and tell me all about it. And I'll give them parameters. I want you to tell me about the size, the location, the environment on campus, the kind of students that go there, the nature of the relationships you'll have with your professors. Do you want large classes? Do you want small classes? What majors might you possibly be interested in? What would you be doing outside of school when you're not hitting the books, when you're not studying? What kind of extracurricular activities? So when I give the students that whole array of factors to consider, and I say, come back to me after you've thought about it and tell me about your generic utopian college, then what I can do is I can say, well, you know what? That's excellent. I know of about 40 schools that are just like what you're describing. Here's a list. And then I'll send the student off with that list. You can go research it, come back to me, and we'll discuss those colleges. And you can tell me which ones you like, which ones you don't like, and tell me why. So the student really does have some homework to do. And it's not about rankings, and it's not about ratings. It's not about prestige. What I want the student to do is to have an array of colleges along the spectrum of selectivity, from easier to get into to most difficult to be admitted to. But then I want there to be a common thread between those schools.
Interesting. I like that idea of painting a utopian situation. That's really unique.
Yeah, most students have not really thought about that. And what I tell them is, look, this is not just where you're going to be going to school. This is going to be your home for 4 years. This is going to be your community. It's not just where you go to class, study, and take tests. This is going to be your community for the next 4 years of your life, and it will be very important in shaping you. What do you think you want? And when I approach it from that direction, I can really get the students to start thinking about that, as long as they are completely honest with themselves. Sometimes, you know, I'll have a meeting with a student where they'll sit down and the parents will be next to them. And so I'll ask a question and then the student will look over to their parent as they're answering, you know, almost, well, is this the right answer? Do you approve of this? Rather than, I want you to tell, you know, and I'll say, don't look at your mom or dad. I want you to tell me what you want. And so that's basically what I mean. I want the student to be as honest with themselves and as honest with me and as honest with their parents as possible. And this can open up some interesting conversations, to be sure. And that's where the counseling part of college counseling comes in.
So could you just kind of tell me what Fairmont International School is all about, and what type of student specifically interested in do you encounter there?
Well, Fairmont is a consortium of independent schools in Southern California. I began at the Fairmont Preparatory Academy, which is basically a typical college preparatory independent high school with high-powered AP and IB classes and a few specialty programs. They have an engineering program. They have an advanced math science program. They have an international business program. And so this school began to attract some international students, which was really very, not just interesting, but really shaped the character of the school in a very positive way. They have a very diverse community. So the school ended up being basically almost 50% international and probably 60-40, 60% domestic and 40% international. And so I got the opportunity to work with both students. Then I moved over to Fairmont International School, where we partner with high schools in East Asia to establish American-style high school curricula, with the idea in mind that these are students who wish to apply to colleges and universities in English-speaking countries. So I work a lot with international students. I work a lot with domestic students in both my school practice and in my private practice. And my role, I'm not really involved in the curricular aspect of this, although I have to some degree, but my main job with this is to, pre-pandemic, I traveled to Asia probably 5-6 times a year to these various partner schools, met with students, and did college counseling with them.
So what, I'm a little confused. Do they end up sending kids to Fairmont, or how does that work exactly? How are they associated?
Some of them do, yes. So some of them remain in their country for their entire high school career. We do issue the transcripts and the diplomas. And then we also have a program where the students come to us for their senior year to the Fairmont Preparatory Academy, where they integrate in with the rest of the student body.
I see.
And then we also have an intensive 5-week summer immersion program where the students come over, live in a homestay, take a U.S. history course, an English course, and shore up their English language skills.
Here are a couple things that stood out to me after the first segment of my conversation with Jonathan. First, it was a bit of a side note, but his point about, you know, the school that a student chooses not being a reflection of one's parenting, I think is a critical one. It's very easy to get wrapped up in the idea that, you know, the success or relative failure of this process really reflects how well we did as parents. But given the amount of uncertainty in that process, really the element of fate that goes into the final decisions that are being made really should give us pause in assuming that it is a reflection of our parenting. In fact, you can do pretty much everything right and not get into that target school, that dream school, you know, that the student has set in their heart, or even not get into any school and have that really be a total bomb or a total failure. That can just really be what's been written in the wind. So, you know, it's important not to put our anxieties into that. And I think that makes it a lot easier to dig a step back at the end of the day and let the students sort of go through that process themselves. Another point that stuck out to me was his notion that identity really is about experimentation, trying things out. That's kind of the whole point of going to visit college campuses. You know, he said, really as many as possible and a sort of diverse assortment of them. He had the exercise of having the student describe their sort of utopian school, which I think is an interesting one. That's a difficult question to answer for somebody who's 17 who hasn't been to any schools, who doesn't know what the possibilities are that are out there. So I think that's going to be hard for them to come up with unless you have that data, unless you have that input. Dreams require information. They require templates, symbols. You know, you're not going to be able to have a dream if you haven't had a thought. So I think it's a tremendous exercise, very interesting and a unique one. I think it's got to go hand in hand with actually having some experience and going to see those campuses. However it is, if it's summer programs, if it's camps, if it's credits that you can get through a local university, getting them some sort of experience there, that is the way that you're really going to determine what the best fit is for you in a meaningful way. What are the main differences between small schools and large state universities?
Okay, I can give a quick overview and then maybe go into just a little bit more detail. I think if you were to do a comparison, sure, the large state university, more class offerings, more majors, more clubs and organizations, much more emphasis on research and graduate students, probably good name recognition, and more pre-professional programs. That would be the large state school. The smaller school, perhaps the private liberal arts college, much more in the way of personal attention. Maybe not as many majors, but certainly deeper treatment within individual majors. Exposure to ideas. Classes are often discussion-based. Emphasis is more on research, maybe in the larger institution, in the smaller school, emphasis on teaching and class discussion. I think at the larger school, a student really needs to be a go-getter if they want to contact their faculty members, their professors. At the smaller school, there's probably a little bit better or easier access to faculty and staff. And at the smaller school, there's close advising, close faculty advising, which results in really terrific letters of recommendation from your professors and very high rates of admission to top graduate schools and professional schools. So that would be an overview. And I think if you want me to go on, I can discuss sort of the pros and cons of each one.
Please do.
Sure.
Yeah, pros and cons.
I would say the large school, the pros are lots of very specific majors, subdivisions of colleges underneath the umbrella institution, a large network of alumni that could help with internships and jobs down the road. Larger schools take on a major role in the character of the surrounding community. You know, large institutions hold up entire college towns, basically relying on them. So there are loads of opportunity, but you have to go and get it. School spirit is large at large schools. Faculty could be world renowned. There are many more students to meet at a large school. So I would say that those are the advantages of a larger school. The disadvantages of a larger school would be the large class sizes. You know, you could have 350 to 500 students in a survey level class. So that's going to result with a lot less direct interaction with faculty, and maybe you would have to rely on a teaching assistant. Students have to compete more for resources at larger schools, and it may be difficult to get the classes that you want or even need. I know in the University of California system, it's really hard to get all the classes that you need in order to graduate on time. And at a large school, it might be difficult to graduate within 4 years. And I think sometimes, depending on the student, and different students have different personalities for these different kinds of schools, I think sometimes students are overwhelmed with so many opportunities at a large school. Where do you go? Where do you start? That can be hard. So that would be a good outline of the pros and cons of a large school. So moving on to a smaller school, I think the pros are definitely smaller class sizes. The classes are all taught by professors, not with TAs. There are many more opportunities to explore. A professor might approach a student and say, hey, you did an excellent job on that section of the biology test. By the way, that happens to be the area of our research in our lab. Would you like to join our lab research team? By the way, we'll be presenting our findings at a conference and writing in a paper, and you could have your name on the journal article. You know, that doesn't happen as much at the larger schools as it could at the smaller schools. That's not to say that it doesn't happen at the larger school, but there are many more research opportunities at smaller schools because at the larger schools, so much of that is reserved for the graduate students. At a smaller school, there's a lot of flexibility within a major and an academic department. You get to know people. As I mentioned earlier, you get fantastic letters of recommendation should you decide to go on to graduate or professional school. And I do believe that students who come out of smaller colleges, they learn more, they know more, generally speaking. This is not, of course, hard and fast rule, but I think generally speaking, students who come out of small colleges have more opportunities for direct interaction with professors. Therefore, they are better critical thinkers. I think they're better writers, and they have a better knowledge base. But there definitely are some cons to a smaller school. And one of them is that there are fewer majors. Sometimes people feel, you know, I keep on seeing the same old people all the time. You get to know a good portion of the population. For some people, that might be a good thing. But for others, that might be, you know, I keep on seeing the same people. I'd like to have a broader spectrum of people to meet on my campus. There's definitely not the same level of school spirit at a smaller institution, although there are some exceptions here and there. And there are not as many obscure majors. So, you know, if you wanted to major in ethnomusicology, you're going to probably be a lot better off at a place like UCLA than you are going to be at a small Midwestern liberal arts college. So, you know, it all depends on what students want and what they think is right for them. And so that's basically a good outline of the difference between larger and smaller schools.
Great. Thank you. That was wonderful. So what can you tell us about regional differences in colleges? Perhaps as a bit of an overview. I know it's an incredibly complex question, but maybe you could just kind of give us some broad strokes as far as what you think about when determining fit, when you're thinking about the region that the students are looking at.
Well, I live on the West Coast, and what's interesting about the West Coast, and basically really the Intermountain West all the way to the West Coast, is that there is not nearly as much choice. If you think about it, the state of California, with 40 million people in it, has only 9 UC campuses. That's not very many campuses for a state of 40 million people. And we have 23 California State University campuses. But what many people don't realize is that many of those Cal State campuses are not large institutions. Some of them are small to medium size, although there are some large ones. So there's a lot, regionally speaking, there's a lot less choice once you are west of the Great Plains, I think. And so the student who wants to attend a smaller school may need to look outside of the West. There are several really good small liberal arts colleges in the West, but not the same kind of selection that you would have on the East Coast or the Midwest. So I think there's more diversity of schools in the Eastern and Midwestern regions of the country, a lot more choice than there are in the American West. We have everything here, but just not as much of it. In the South, you might have a lot more traditional schools or schools with entrenched traditions. Although all schools have traditions, but you know, a certain kind of a cultural tradition in certain schools in the South that you might not see in the West or the Midwest. But you know, within every state, you know, for instance, you know, the state of Iowa, you would have a whole range of colleges from super liberal to super conservative, public, private, small, medium, large. So regionally speaking, you can find almost anything that you want anywhere. It's just that regionally speaking, there won't be as much choice the farther west you go.
Interesting. Could you tell us a success story about a placement that went particularly well and what sort of approach led to that success?
I can think of someone with whom I worked just this admissions cycle. And it was a young woman who came to me, was attending a large public high school in Los Angeles, was not getting much in the way of college counseling at her school. And she came to me with this potential list of colleges that was just all over the place. And I couldn't see any rhyme or reason to the choices that were on that list. And I asked her, what's the prevailing theme here? What is it that you see? Why are these colleges on your list? And she couldn't really articulate why. It was just sort of throwing darts at the wall and seeing where they landed. You know, you see that a lot, but this was a particular case of this. And maybe it was because the season was late. This was a student who came to me in the fall of her senior year and just really needed a little bit of guidance. So we sat down for a couple of meetings and really had a deep discussion about what she really wanted. What would she want to major in? What characteristics of college were important to her? But once again, getting into the personality of the school. And we really ruminated over this for quite a while. And then I finally came up with a list of schools. She was about to take a visit to some East Coast schools. And I said, you know, based on everything that you've told me, this was a very creative student who was artistic, musical, also possibly interested in maybe filmmaking or media, but also was interested in some science, some biological science. So she was a bit of a Renaissance woman, but the way she outlined her specific interests, one particular school popped into my mind, and that was Ithaca College, which is a very interesting institution that's sort of in between a small liberal arts college and a larger school, because it really is medium-sized. And she was going to be visiting some schools.
How many kids are in?
I think it's about, is it about 5,000? I think so. Anyhow, she was going to be visiting a couple schools in upstate New York. And I said, well, why don't you, while you're there, why don't you visit Ithaca College and see what you think? It's in a college town. It's where Cornell is. You know, you can even do a little bit of cross-registration there. So check it out and tell me what you think. And sure enough, she went there with her family. And she fell in love with the place. And that's where she's going to end up. So that was my particular success story of this year. And, you know, when I say success story, I don't mean, oh, we got into Harvard. We got into an Ivy League school. That's not necessarily what we mean by success. What I meant by success in this particular case, this is a student who wasn't exactly sure where to go and what she wanted. I was able to steer her in a direction. And sure enough, she found a place that she fell in love with. And so that is what I consider a success story.
Here are a couple of things that stuck out to me after the second portion of my discussion with Jonathan. He really provided a wonderful, thorough description of the differences between large schools and small schools. You know, his concept basically that, you know, large state schools have more grad programs, more nuanced, sort of distinct majors or sort of small divisions within those majors. The price you pay for that, though, is with perhaps some TAs teaching the classes and not the actual professors, a bit of anonymity in terms of your identity there. You know, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head with that description, with the pros and cons. With the small liberal arts schools, that certainly also reverberated with my experience, I think, and I went to Kenyon, so a small liberal arts school, in other words, and so did he. More class discussion, more access to the professors, smaller class sizes, no TAs. That was all really true of what I had at Kenyon. Yeah, there aren't the same types of diverse opportunities as far as the majors, and there weren't too many grad programs at Kenyon. I can't think of any. There may be, but that's really what you're getting when you go to a small liberal arts school. But man, it taught me how to write, and it taught me the humanities, taught me how to write and how to think. So that really should be kind of your expectation, I guess, going to a place like a small liberal arts school. You know, it's not job training. I mean, unless you're going to go on to be an editor, I suppose, or perhaps an English teacher, you know, that is not what you would go to that type of school for. So I think it's important because you can kind of rule out an entire half of, you know, the options that are out there. If you know right off the bat, okay, I'm looking for a small liberal arts school. That really starts to narrow things down quite dramatically, regionally, just numerically, in terms of the options. And it's an important first step, and I think one that should start the college process. Another thing that stuck out to me was his description of the West. And really, it is more spread out there, so I guess this comes as no surprise, but a far less diverse set of options, particularly in terms of liberal arts schools. And I suppose that's true. I can probably only think of a handful of small liberal arts schools, you know, that are Rocky Mountains or over. There are some. They're certainly out there. But I mean, if you're saying to yourself, I want a small liberal arts school, you know, West Coast is probably not the first place that you would look to hone and search. Geography is such an important part of this college process in a number of ways, not only in terms of those broader regional distinctions that we're talking about with the West, but also just in terms of proximity to home. I was a 16-hour drive from Connecticut when I went to Ohio. You know, if you're a plane ride away, if you're down the street, that determines your college experience to some degree. Driving home, I would carpool with some other kids, and, you know, I would bond with the kids that were in my state. Or, you know, I would also bond with kids who were from the region, from Ohio, even Kentucky, across the state lines. You should give some thought to that. How far away from home do you really want to be? That's, I think, an important consideration. How has this sort of post-pandemic climate impacted the different school types? Have some been impacted more than others? And in what sort of ways specifically are we talking about there?
I think the post-pandemic period has impacted almost all schools in some ways. I think the very well-known schools are getting more and more applications than they ever have before. It's getting more and more selective. You know, even public institutions here in California, the University of California schools are getting exceedingly difficult to get into. It's really difficult. I think a lot of smaller schools, particularly in the Midwest and the East Coast, some of the lesser known smaller schools are really struggling financially. Their enrollment is dropping. I think in general, a lot of people are beginning to question the value of college. For those who feel that college should only really be job training, a lot of people with those thoughts are saying, you know, should I even go to college? And so that's resulting in a drop of applications to some of the lesser known schools, where the more selective schools are getting even more and more applications. So that's probably the immediate post-pandemic in terms of admissions.
Yeah, no, that's great. So let me ask you, how has that affected the way that you are approaching applications, knowing that you have this sort of dichotomy of the upper echelon schools becoming ridiculously hard to get into, 4% admission rates or whatever it is, and then a number of schools desperate to get people in the door that perhaps aren't that much worse in terms of the educational quality. However, to suggest that the name on the degree doesn't matter, I would say is specious as well. So I'm just wondering how that's impacted your sort of calculus on determining where to direct kids.
Well, I'll go back to the philosophy that I spoke of earlier, and it's basically fit. So if you have a really selective school that you like and can articulate to me exactly why you like it, I will say, okay, of course, go ahead and apply there. But knowing that the acceptance rate is much lower than it was, you know, just 4 or 5 years ago, here are some other schools that you should apply to. And I think it also depends upon what students think they may want to do post-graduation after college. Now, of course, many high school students have no idea at that point, but some students do know. You know, I may want to go to medical school. I may want to go to law school, or I might want to go on for a master's or PhD. If a student is interested in doing postgraduate or additional education beyond the bachelor's degree, then I say, okay, you can definitely look at this small college that other people may not know as well, because the people at the top level graduate school, they will know these colleges and they will know the professors that you're getting recommendations from, because they're in my field. They will know that. They will have read their scholarly works. Mm-hmm. They will have probably met them at a conference somewhere. They may have even corresponded with each other. They will know. If, on the other hand, a student says, you know, I definitely know I'm going to do 4 years of college, and then I know for sure I'm going to go onto the job market immediately, then maybe that's where we would need to tailor the list to, you know, a larger school, more well-known, where we know that recruiters come to campus in large numbers. But there are some really interesting schools out there, large schools that are easier to get into, that are surprisingly high ranked in certain departments where recruiters come. You know, something that I think about is the Eller College of Management at the University of Arizona, where I think over 300 potential employers come every year to recruit their students. And yet it's not as difficult a school to get into as some other places, but it is an outstanding place. So that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, it really is differential in terms of the different departments. The relative strength of all those graduate programs is important.
Right. And, you know, another example of that was a few years ago, I had a student that was interested in architecture, you know, and they had all of the really high powered, difficult schools to get into on the list. And I made a suggestion, you know, you may want to take, don't laugh at me for saying this, you may want to take a look at Montana State University. And so, you know, we looked up the website, Montana State University, and we looked up the architecture professors in that department. And, you know, so many of the professors there had their degrees from Ivy League institutions or UC Berkeley or something like that. And I said, look, this is where they went to school. You think they've got connections? You think they know people? Of course they do. So that's one of the ways in which I'm able to talk to parents and talk to students about looking at alternative schools that may be a little easier to get into, but where they'll also have a fantastic education because an individual department at a certain institution is truly outstanding.
One final question for you. If you had one sort of parting piece of advice for parents of these young adults, or perhaps the students themselves, what would that parting piece of advice be?
Well, to parents, I would say, give your child some space in this process. Let them do their own exploration. Be supportive. Lend guidance. But try not to jump in and orchestrate the process for them. Let this be their voyage of self-discovery and really let them take their own path. For students, I would say, be honest. Be honest with yourself. Don't do something that other people want you to do. Do something that you want to do and do something that you're passionate about. Because if you're passionate about something, then more than likely you're going to succeed, because that's really what it takes.
Here are a few things that stuck out to me after my conversation with Jonathan. There was a passing phrase that he used in describing regional differences that stood out to me. He basically said that anywhere you go, you can basically find anything that you're looking for. That really sounded an awful lot like the American dream, perhaps on the most shallow of levels, the commercialized life of you can get any meal, any product, any experience for a certain dollar value, no matter where you go in America. And that got me thinking about the college experience itself and it sort of being like the McDonald's of education or the fast food of education. You know, that college experience, I think, has become somewhat of a, I want to get whatever I want wherever I go for that sort of generation that's had the world at their fingertips, particularly with, you know, social media now and iPhones, the iPhone generation. So it has become somewhat commodified in that way, a commodified experience, a commercialized one. And that's why you hear all of these educational consultants sort of fighting against this current of, I need the brand name, I need the Ivy League degree or, you know, whatever that is, despite that getting more and more competitive 4% admissions rating through some of those Ivy League schools and very top tier ones. And you have this dichotomy that's emerging between elite schools and everybody else. That is really the byproduct of commercialized experience. So I think it's hard to say that you can't get a good burger at Wendy's or Burger King or whatever it is. I mean, you certainly do. You know, their brand name is all over that, and that's worth something. But perhaps these college consultants are onto something when they say, well, there are other places that are just as valuable, that have professors that are just as high quality, just as well esteemed, and are worth every penny as much as the brand names. Another thing that stuck out to me was a return to that navigation between the parents' involvement in the college process and the students and then the educational consultant. And really how tricky that can be because of all of the sort of various expectations, the relationships that color that whole dynamic. Really, a good educational consultant is good at navigating human relationships. A bit of a negotiator in a lot of ways, not only negotiating in those relationships, but also in fluid ones. For the student is never so much in flux as when they're determining a college. That is really the epicenter of the evolving of our lives at that age 17 point. I can think of no time when, you know, so much is at stake and so much sort of pivots on that one point. So to some degree, an educational consultant has to be able to shape water, for lack of a better metaphor. It's really tough. That is why it's important to have a good college consultant in your corner, to be able to have that coming of age moment, really that determines essentially everything else for that person's life.